It is Locked On Jazz for the 31st of July. Ed Davis and I sit down and talk about how analytics helps his offensive rebounding. And then Andy Larson rejoins on the summer interview series discussing the shooting, the different team, Mike Conley, and clutch play. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA Insider. This is Locked On Jazz. It's your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, hopefully making the offseason way better for you and getting you ready for when we all getting started and making it more fun to be a fan. Thank you, everybody. I apologize. I was fiddling with some things so that we do live programming next year. It's even better and hits more outlets. And was able to do it, but didn't know that the title said free agent signing, and so I apologize for those of you who I gave a little scare to yesterday. That was not my intention, so apologize for that. If you get a chance to thank Andy B. Larson on Twitter and thank him for coming on the show, I'd greatly appreciate it. He brings great insight. Today's show is a lot of fun. We're going to get into the impact of the shooting. We deep into the QSQ numbers on that. We're going to get deep into the clutch numbers and the change of Mike Conley to Ricky Rubio and some of that stuff. So I think that'll be hopefully you'll really, really like that. Thank you to Jay Trace for the five-star review on iTunes. I super appreciate that. And the summertime interviews are fun. Thank you very much for that reference. McGavin J, I'm hooked. Five stars back in June. I thank you very much for that. And Harper KI390, thanks as well for the iTunes five-star review. I greatly appreciate that. All right, let's get to it. I sit down with Ed Davis. We talk about why Utah, his run, interesting career path he's taken and how he got comfortable with it. And then he shares a little bit about how analytics helps his offensive rebounding. And then when we're done with that, we will have a great deal of fun with Andy Larson. Today's show is brought to you in part by Bombas, who are the most comfortable socks in the history of feet. Plus, for every Bombas purchase, they donate a pair to someone in need. Find out more about what your feet daydream about at bombas.com/locked. Get 20% off at bombas.com/locked.
Sitting down with Ed Davis, the wearing a Jazz shirt and stopping here in Utah. I don't know if you know this, but there were huge boos about now 9 or 10 years ago when the Jazz drafted Gordon Hayward because the crowd wanted Ed Davis. So it took a decade for many of these fans to get the guy they wanted. Now he's you're finally in Utah.
Right. Probably would have cost that GM his job if he would have drafted me, man.
You've got a very interesting journey in the sense that you grew up as the son of an NBA player. Do you think that made being an NBA player much more kind of attainable to you or something that seemed reasonable just since you grew up in a house where there was an NBA player?
Yes, I think it gave me an advantage, you know, in the sense that, you know, my parents always let me put basketball first. You know, as tough or bad as it may seem, but, you know, my mom literally let me, you know, play outside before, you know, I had to do my homework. So at the end of the day, you know, it paid off, you know, for me. So I appreciate my parents for that. But, you know, it definitely did give me an advantage for sure.
You're going to let, when you have kids, do you have kids yet?
Yeah.
Are you going to let your kids do that?
Probably not. Probably not, but I appreciate my parents for letting me do that.
All right, before we get into basketball, and I love to get into the nitty gritty, just the process of ending up in Utah. It's an interesting one, right? You got paid probably market value, so there wasn't one of these things where you took less money, but they do have arguably the best center in the league standing in front of you in the rotation. So what made you decide, okay, I know Rudy's getting 34 a night. If he's healthy, I'm willing to come here for 14, 18 minutes a night.
Right. I mean, one, being on a contender was probably the leading thing that made me, you know, make the decision. And then, you know, being comfortable, like, I mean, I understand, you know, my role and, you know, what's going to keep me in this league. So, you know, from a business standpoint, you know, it was the right decision, you know, basketball wise, you know, coming here and, like you said, playing, you know, I probably average, 16 to 18 minutes and, you know, I'll start some games that he's out. So, you know, I think it's a good opportunity for me and I'm looking forward to it.
And I said on the air last year, Ed Davis only has one bad, when we were playing you, Ed Davis only has one bad night, two bad nights a year as a backup center. It's when he plays the Jazz and Derek Favors is coming at him because it's the only other backup center in the league who was of your level. So this way you force Derek Favors out of being a backup center. Now you can just be the best backup center in the league and not have to worry about Faves anymore.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he was a starter, so right. you can't really consider him a backup center.
Well, when you were guarding him on the pick and roll, I think, and I was like, okay, this has got to be the one night where Ed Davis is like, wait, what's going on here? You get drafted, I think, 13th, if I remember correctly, to Toronto. You're out of North Carolina. Your dad's been a pro. If I had told you on that day, hey, by the way, you're going to have an incredible career, mm-hmm. you'll never start more than 30 games in a season, you would have thought I was crazy, I'm assuming.
Yeah, for sure. You know, definitely, you know, being a top recruit coming out of high school, going to Carolina, McDonald's All-American, you know, you just, the writing's on the wall, you know, you got to be an all-star, you know, you got to start, you got to average 20 and 10, da-da-da-da, so for sure.
So how do you get to a point where a moment ago you just so comfortably said to me, I'm going to play 18 a night, I've got my role, I'm going to be winning. How'd you get there? What was that like for you to get to that point?
Right. I say, one, like, understanding, you know, the business side of, you know, the NBA. You know, sometimes in certain situations, you know, you can be, you know, better than a person in front of you. But, you know, if the GM drafted this guy ahead of you, you know, he's going to play the guy that he drafted. So, you know, understanding that side and, you know, not fighting it, ending up being out the lead. So that helped out a lot. And then I said earlier I was in Memphis and, you know, I got my first DNP of my life there. So that humbled me a lot. And that really, you know, woke me up to the NBA.
Okay, but you can do two things at that point. Like, I mean, I have a good friend who played in the NBA once said to me, like, I made an extra $7 million for not being an a-hole.
Right.
Like, but the easy answer when you get the DNP is you're not thinking about the fact that you're getting that contract at the end because you're a good dude.
Right.
How'd you handle that?
I mean, at first it was tough. You know, I was probably, you know, a little immature at times. You know, not nothing like recklessly, but, you know, just, I guess, you know, I guess, I don't know, like, you know, after a win, you know, when you don't play, you know, you still feel some type of way when you put that uniform on and get a DNP. You know, it's just, you're part of the team, but it's still like, I don't know how to describe it. You got to ask, you know, all the guys that, you know, that been through DNPs before. It's just like a weird feeling. So, you know, once I, like, you know, matured from that and, you know, understand it's a bigger picture and, you know, just this is just a stop, you know. I was able to, you know, to get past that, you know, that dark stage of my career.
You are one of the, I'm fortunate enough to be able to sit in on shoot-arounds and see what goes on and not supposed to talk about it, but I don't think I'm violating too much. You're one of the few bench players whose shoot-arounds stop to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, Ed Davis is coming off the bench. He's averaging X amount of rebounds per 48. He's the number one offensive rebounder in the league. We got, like, there's legitimate time spent on you in a shoot-around despite the fact you're not starting. How much are you aware of that, and how much pride do you have in that?
I mean, I take pride in everything I do in life in general, but I mean, for that, obviously, you know, you want to be talked about in this league, because once they start talking about you, you know, that's when you're pretty much done. So, you know, whenever I get out there, I'm just trying to come in and just trying to, you know, make my impact on the game some way, somehow, if it's offense, defense, you know, rebounding, blocking shots, you know, hustling for a loose ball, you know, I'm just trying to make an impact. And that's just my main thing while I'm out there. You know, I want my presence to be felt. I just don't want to be out there floating.
Offensive rebounding has become a signature. Your defensive rebounding numbers are great this year, too. You were sharing before we started the analytics as a part of it. Share what you've done and how this all started, where you began to learn using analytics to help your rebounding.
Yeah, so when I was in Portland, my boy John Yim, who I worked out with a lot, you know, always tried to, you know, help me out some way, somehow, with some type of advantage. And, you know, One day he was like, he had this probably like 20 sheets where, you know, the shots from, you know, different places around the arc, you know, elbow shots, layups, and like all the misses. And he was showing me like, hey, the rebounds that come, this is the hot spot, this is not the hot spot. So if you have the option to get either here or there, your chances are going up if you're here. You know, just trying to dumb it down for the people that's listening. So, you know, once that, you know, we started to go over that and started to study that, you know, my numbers started to increase.
All right, right corner three goes up. where are you going?
One, I mean, sometimes it depends on the shooter, you know, if it's offense or defense. So, you know.
All right, let's say offense. Let's pick on Joe Ingles. You'll learn that we like to do this because he picks on all of us.
Right.
So Joe Ingles gets to the right corner. He's 51% in his career from the right corner. I have to mention that by rule every time. Mm-hmm. And he stunningly misses.
Right.
Joe never does this, but he actually misses a shot. Where is it going to miss?
Most likely long. So I'm trying to pin my guy under the basket and have all the space on the other side so that the ball is just dropping. Like you said, these teams are so spaced out now. It's just, you know, me versus another guy, and I like my chances.
Well, and I was with Nick Collison the year he sat out. He said, like, what'd you learn? He goes, no one in this league boxes out.
Yeah.
Like, no one boxes out. Right. All right, let's talk one other thing offensively. Quinn Snyder's a huge pick-and-roll guy. You've played pick-and-roll with Damian Lillard for 2 years. You played pick-and-roll for D'Angelo Russell for a year, really last year predominantly. What have you learned about different guys, and what can you bring into that when you're playing pick-and-roll with Donovan Mitchell?
Different guys look for different stuff, and they're comfortable making, you know, different passes. You know, like playing with D'Angelo, I knew that, you know, he wasn't, you know, afraid, you know, to make the risky passes. Like, he didn't really care about the turnover. But Dame, he's more like he's focused on, you know, keeping everything straight. So he's not going to throw that reckless pass and, you know, try to make something out of nothing. So, you know, just, you know, understanding the players and, you know, is he a good, you know, I played with Jeremy Lin, you know, he's very good at, you know, the lobs. So, and I played with some guys who, you know, they weren't comfortable making the lobs. So just understanding, you know, the player and, you know, playing with, you know, Donovan and Mike, you know, they don't get so much attention. I feel like I get a lot of easy baskets playing with them.
Ed, pleasure to chat with you. Look forward to doing it throughout the season.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thanks a ton to Ed Davis for taking that time. Thanks to Derek Garduno of the Jazz PR staff who helped set up those interviews. Andy Larson's coming up in just a second. Make sure you catch the new Locked On NFL expert analysis from former NFL scout Matt Williamson, hosted by Brian Beacock. Locked On NFL is your daily national podcast on all things NFL with Matt Williamson's unique take on the game. Today's show is brought to you in part by The Store, 6200 South, 13th East. But excuse me, 20th East, but now also a mini store at 9th South and 1st West, right next to Lazzy's Kitchen and right next to that track stop there on 9th South. It's great. It's a mini version of the store. It has all their best stuff. So 9th South, and then a brand new one opening in the gateway right across from the Children's Center or Children's Museum, right on the same street as the arena. Was just down there with Jeff and Scott, had a wonderful time. All right, I've told you a ton about the amazing Mudslide cookie and the Leatherby's Locked On Mudslide ice cream, which I'd have to say, I still like both of them just as much as I said before. But let me say this. They gave me some brisket. And I'm not about to tell you that I think that anything is better than a Mudslide cookie. But the brisket is awfully close. The story is really, really cool. It's out of a Logan family who has a 250,000 square foot facility, Double L Ranch Meats. And they have their brisket there. All you have to do is heat it up on the grill. It's pre-cooked. It was totally incredible. So make sure you go grab that at the store, 600 South, 20th East. All the other meats there as well they've tested it out. They go in these taste tests. They take it all seriously. And then they're Utah's own. All the local Utah companies there, that are, whether it's the jellies or the chips or the cotton candies, all there as well. It's all what makes the store so great. 600 South, 20th East, and now a new store at 900 South and 100 West. Check it out. Day two with the fabulous Andy Larson here. If you didn't hear the Monday edition, it is available for you. Also, if you did not hear the Monday edition of Locked On NBA with Trevor Booker, it was fabulous. So make sure you go back and grab that. Andy, we left on Monday's conversation kind of with the lineup and rotations and things of that nature, and how you use guys in this. Let's back up a step. Like, the idea that this team has shooting, how dramatically different do you view this team now than what it was a year ago?
So dramatically different. And I think Quinn Snyder has to view it differently. All of a sudden, instead of having to create all of these baskets at the rim kind of through offensive creativity. Now it's a very different offensive game, and I know that he is excited for that, that he has all these different shooters that can make shots. I mean, we know this. David, you've talked about this nonstop. I have too, that the difference between the Jazz and the Rockets last year in the playoffs was not the defensive approach. It was not the talent of their best players. It was that the Jazz could not make open shots. I mean, to a playoff leading or playoff bottom of the playoffs degree, whatever, however you want to call it, they could not make open shots. You know, made 20% of their open threes optimistically. So all of a sudden, if you're making 35, 40, 45% of those threes that you should be, that changes everything about this team, not only for guys like Donovan Mitchell who drive into the rim and finish, but for, you know, Rudy Gobert who's rolling to the rim and now is those you know, help side defenders are less likely to collapse and prevent that roll, to dig in on that roll. And it, you know, for someone like Joe Ingles who you know, teams have been, you know, more careful about defending his perimeter shots, how, you know, they can't leave Bojan Bogdanovic in order to do that. I just, the amount of shooting that they have compared to last year is, it's night and day. And so to me, like the offensive potential of this team goes from, you know, I thought Quinn Snyder maximized the offensive potential of last year's team to be a average 15th, 16th ranked team. And now I really do believe that this team can and maybe even should be a top five offensive team in the league next year.
All right. Simple, and then we'll dig in and make it deep. QSQ, quantified shot quality, yeah. Second spectrum number. Last year, the Jazz had a QSQ of 54.7. That means that if every player on the team had shot average, the Jazz would have shot 54.7% last year as effective field goal percent. Instead, they were a point and a half below that, and they had the fifth best shooting team in the league. All those dunks help shooting. Last year, the Warriors were 56.1 and 54.7. If the Jazz had shot average, would have made the Jazz the second best shooting team in the league. The Warriors are unlikely to be 56.1 this year. Like, is there a chance this is the first, if the Jazz can get those same quality looks, can they be average? Are they a chance to being like one of the one or two best shooting teams in the league?
Yeah, I think so. But then to me, the crazy thing is they were 27th in the league in turnovers last year. And then the difference between Ricky Rubio and Mike Conley is staggering at that, right? So you move from 27th to, let's say they move only to 17th. And so you're not only are you the best, you know, the best shooting team, yeah, like you say, top one, top two, top three, whatever it is, and you don't turn over the ball. And maybe you're not as good at the offensive rebounding part of the game, but hell, Ed Davis is really good at that, just as good as Derek Favors was. Like, I think offensively, I don't get how the Jazz don't have tremendous success next year. I mean, really, the only way is if Donovan Mitchell fails to adapt and continues to take kind of some of the iffy shots that he did last year. But I think those were out of necessity, not out of him forcing things. I think for me, if everyone takes the shots they can and should next year, then yes, you're totally right. The QSQ looks brilliant. They actually make the shots that the QSQ says they should have, and then they're not turning over the ball. I mean, it really is like a recipe for offensive success.
We'll dig into that Donovan thing coming up here in this interview with Andy. But was the QSQ the best in the league because teams left Rubio, Crowder, and Favors wide open, or because Quinn Snyder's offense gets incredible looks?
I mean, this is the obvious answer, and you gave me the options. I'm going to say both, right? But yes, obviously, teams left Ricky Rubio, teams left Jay Crowder wide open. I mean, there's no doubt we all watched 82 games. That definitely happened. And yet, I also think that you talk to coaches around the league, you talk to people who were watching the tactics of the game, and they consistently list Quinn Snyder as one of the league's best coaches in drawing up plays, open shots for their teammates. And, you know, I think ultimately you, and given even his coach, his history as an assistant coach with Atlanta, with the Lakers in that era, you know, they got consistently good shots for Quinn Snyder's entire career. So I think you give Quinn Snyder these offensive weapons, and yeah, you know, you're not going to get maybe the open shots Ricky Rubio got, but that means if Mike Conley's not getting those open shots anymore, now Rudy Gobert's open down low for a shot. Now Bojan Bogdanovic can do one of his trademark backdoor cuts to the rim. And you have layups, which, as you know, are the best QSQ opportunities. So, I think that's where we're going to see a lot of creative stuff from Quinn. And yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you on the Quinn is a genius bandwagon, because I do think his offensive stuff is as good as anyone's in the league.
Here's what's so interesting, and this might have to, and I just don't know this. And this is like where you get a new stat and you don't have enough data points to try to figure it out. And I've been trying to work on a major project about kind of what we can expect the Jazz to shoot. So Mike Conley's QSQ last year in Memphis was 49.4. And then he shot 1.3 points above that. Okay. Ricky Rubio's was 52.1. So 3.5 points better than what Conley's was. Now he was a minus six. Because he's was really maybe the worst shooter's position in the league. So, like, if Rubio is 52 and Conley was 49, like, what do we think Conley is with the Jazz?
I mean, probably a little, the QSQ-wise, probably a little bit in between those numbers. Let's say, you know, 51. And then you say that he's a plus 1.3. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
So then his, you know, expected field goal is again significantly higher and is one of the best point guard numbers in the league.
I mean, right? If he's if you're a point guard at 52% effective field goal percentage, that's sick.
Yeah.
Like Donovan's effective field goal percentage last year, I believe, was 46.8 or somewhere. That's low, really low. Like league average is right around 50. All right, same question. Bojan Bogdanovic's QSQ in Indiana was 51.4. Jay Crowder's was 55.5. Crowder shot 5 percentage points below what an average player would have with the same shots. Bogdanovic shot 7 points above what an average player would with those shots. No, sorry, 5 points above what he would have with those shots.
Okay.
So what – and he was a 51.4, Crowder was a 55.5. What do you suspect?
Again, you don't expect to get as good of shots as Jay Crowder because Jay Crowder teams left open for a reason. But Bogdanovic was the number one option in Indiana for half of that season. And with, I think, a coach who is not as good at getting his team open shots as Quinn Snyder is. And so, like that. So again, you probably expect the shot quality to go down a little bit for the Jazz point of view from Crowder to Bogdanovic, but you expect the shot making to go from a minus five to a plus five. I don't think there's a whole lot of reason to expect the shot making itself to change. You know, I think you should be able to make open shots, whether it's in Indiana or in Utah. And so, yeah, as a result, like, all of a sudden, you're making, you know, 10% more of your shots. Let's say 8% more at that position, and you're just wildly, wildly better.
Jeff Green, by the way, was a 52.8 QSQ and a plus 3.
Okay.
Pretty good.
That's much better than I thought. Like, early career Jeff Green was not that guy.
We had the interview with him earlier in the show, on Monday's show. It was interesting what he said about that. Just, you know, the game adapted. I adapted with it. When I came into the league, you were supposed to take mid-range shots. And, you know, like, I'm now doing what you're supposed to do. So I thought that, and that's what I work at. And both Ed Davis and Jeff Green, who people have heard in the interviews now, are super, super impressive. He is Andy Larson. We appreciate him with us. We'll have more coming up. We'll talk a little bit about that, Donovan. Also, close games have been a problem for the Utah Jazz, but I had a conversation with someone who knows Mike Conley well, and he would give you a different point of view on that. Support of Locked On Jazz comes from Manscaped, the number one men's below-the-belt grooming. You may have seen them on Shark Tank. Manscaping offers precision engineering tools for your family jewels. Get 20% off free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. That's 20% at manscaped.com with the promo code LOCKEDON. More with Andy Larson as we continue on Locked On Jazz on the Locked On Podcasting Network. More with Andy Larson coming. We'll talk about Conley's impact, clutch play, and how that's going on. The August deals are rolling over at Murdoch Hyundai starting tomorrow, 4646 South State Street, also in Logan and in Linden. The Murdoch family has been in Utah for 90-plus years, and the Hyundai brand is one you should certainly check out. If you have not already looked at Hyundai when you're looking at a car, go check out and see what you can get for your dollar. It's amazing. I'm driving the newest Santa Fe. It's got all the bells and whistles, the safety door that won't open in the back if your kids try to open it with oncoming traffic, keeps you with your lane assist, the amazing cruise control as well. We bought a three-road Santa Fe as the family cart that my son uses all the time. It's basically his. It's been fabulous. Makes me feel comfortable considering all the safety awards they've won. The little Kona is a great SUV. The Tucson, they've upgraded time and time again, and it's really zippy and cool with great colors, plus the great lineup of sedans. Check it out, Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. Stop by, say hi to Jason and the crew there, or up in Logan and in Linden where Blake's hanging out. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. Find out about the Murdoch Guarantee, making sure you have a no-regrets experience. J.B. Bickerstaff said to me when I chatted with him about Mike Conley, well, he said two things. He used a phrase I can't use on the air about him, that he's just the absolute like best dude and the biggest beepty beep at the same time, which I thought was interesting. And then he talked about how he manages games and gets everyone going, and then when it's money time, takes over. His clutch number's not as good the last few years as they were prior. That whole concept of having somebody who could close games well and have an approach to closing games, how big an upgrade for the Jazz is that?
I'll be curious because I think, you know, I am skeptical as a numbers guy of the guys who are regarded as clutch, you know, and Mike has that name, you know, Clutch Conley, and got that in Memphis and earned that, et cetera, et cetera. But you're right, the numbers have not been brilliant for what he does. But I do think that there's a difference in giving the one guy the ball on the floor every time and just asking him to create something with 8 seconds left on the shot clock than it is if you have multiple different weapons you can throw at teams and take advantage of mismatches and that sort of thing. So, you know, so like I'm thinking of the Oklahoma City game last year, multiple overtimes, you have Donovan Mitchell and he's just gassed. He's just dead. And the Jazz have to keep Ricky Rubio out there, who is struggling with turnovers and struggling with defense, but he's literally the only other player on the team who can dribble the ball and get them into something. So they, you know, Quinn has to keep Ricky out there, but it's really Donovan Mitchell who has to take care of every single clutch possession through multiple overtimes. Now all of a sudden you do have Mike Conley who can do that, and you have obviously Donovan's shown his ability to do that in the playoffs. That you can switch back and forth between those guys being the primary creator and the secondary creator, I think will make both of them more effective, especially, you know, Donovan in the last 2 years and Mike Conley in the last 2 months, if you will. So, you know, since Mark Gasol was traded, I think Mark could do some of that on his own. But, you know, neither of those guys has had a backcourt mate that they could trade off for. And I think it will be an adjustment for them to learn how to do that. But ideally, you end up with a situation, I think, Quinn is smart enough to take advantage of this, that you can take advantage of those mismatches. You can see who's tired and who's not, and give some opportunities that maybe the Jazz didn't have last year. And as a result, I think, you know, you can, it is smart to expect the Jazz to play better in close games. Now, close games are so random that, like, you know, it's probably 75% randomness, 25% skill. So even if they are significantly more skilled than they were last year, the randomness might take over. The randomness was pretty bad for them last year, though. So, like, if they get a little bit more lucky on the random side and are more skilled, then again, you end up winning maybe, you know, five more close games than you did last year. I don't think that's a crazy number. And all of a sudden, that impacts your win-loss record in a big way.
Let me give you a number or two and tell me if you think this is randomness or not, okay?
Okay.
In games decided by 5 points or less that were within 5 points, okay, it's a little funky, but that's what we got.
Yeah.
In games in which Ricky Rubio played, the Jazz were 7-14. In games in which he did not play, we were 8-2.
I think that is, again, 75% randomness. Because is that over last year? Is that last year only or 2 years?
The year prior, when Ricky Rubio played in close games, the Jazz were 11-8 and 5-5 when he was off the floor, I believe.
See, that to me is an indication that that is, again, largely randomness. Because I thought the Jazz were very good at in random games in close games. 2017-18 and last year 2018-19, they were not as good. And they brought back the exact same team. So, you know, unless you want to say Alec Burks was the difference there, and I don't think he was, I think that's randomness. Sometimes about the shots go in. When you're talking about a 40% shooter taking over the course of a season 40 shots, some seasons you're going to make 15, some seasons you're going to make 20, and that's just the way it is. And I think that to me is the big difference there on the clutch side.
It's interesting. I mean, in clutch moments, now let me ask, maybe this is randomness, but in 30 games of clutch play, Jay Crowder shot 38% and 15% from the field. Donovan Mitchell shot 36% and 28% from the field. Rubio actually shot it pretty well, but very rarely. What do you think that Mike Conley does to relieve that pressure on? Here's a crazy one. Final 5 minutes of a game within 5 minutes, Donovan Mitchell took 84 shots. Rudy Gobert took 28. Jay Crowder took 21. That doesn't even count possessions used. That doesn't count all the free throws. If you want to get into possessions used, Donovan used about 100, and the next closest was Rudy Gobert at 40.
Yeah. So, agreed. To me, that will absolutely change next year. And I think you can point to specific possessions down in clutch games last year where Donovan was clearly tired and was clearly taking bad shots at the end of the shot clock because he was, quote-unquote, the guy, and so the team asked him to take those shots, and yet he was not prepared to do so. And next year's team will ask him to do that far less frequently because Mike Conley will exist, and he can take on that load as well. And quite frankly, Bogdanovich can too. I don't think that it should be regarded as this huge, I don't know how many games this is. I think some of the improvement of the Jazz in clutch time next year will be because they were unlucky last year and because they, will presumably be normal lucky next year on the aggregate, if that makes sense.
The only thing I'd say, Mike Conley, three-point shooting, and this is actually, you have to go over a two-year period of time, or a three-year period of time, because he basically didn't play for that middle season. But in the last two years in which he's played clutch, he's pretty darn good. He's 27 of 74, which gets him up a little, about 38%. I mean, that's just a big number for another guy with the ball in his hands to have, or 37, I think it's 37%, to have as a good shooter. They were 19 and 21 in the clutch when he played last year for a pretty crappy team.
Yeah, I mean, he was, again, phenomenal in clutch and has shown that ability in the past. And, I mean, there were games where he obviously also did not make shots. And so, yeah, I think 27 out of 71 is fair to expect, maybe even more, given that he won't have that defensive focus on him. And nevertheless, the Jazz are going to lose some clutch games. I'm with you. The Jazz will be better in clutch games. I don't love clutch stats, because it is so, there is just like that huge element of randomness. And I think the difference between the 2017-18 Utah Jazz and the 2018-19 Utah Jazz is a perfect example of how sometimes player changes don't necessarily lead to changes in your win-loss record in close games.
When I run my numbers, they're not great, largely because Donovan Mitchell still projects, because I don't have a great projection system to figure out what he's doing in year three, quite honestly, as an inefficient offensive player. Like, I can't I don't have the capability of putting in what his new teammates are. So in your mind, how different a player do you think he's going to be efficiency-wise this year than what he was in the past?
I am fascinated to find out. I mean, I don't know. To me, this is much more about Donovan's decision-making and psyche than it is about anything that I know how to predict. You know, I think there's going to be an element of he will be one of the top scorers for Team USA this season in a FIBA World Cup. And there will be an element of he is now a shoe guru, you know, with a shoe deal and everything else. You know, he is one of the defining stars of the league. And so in his mind, he will be want to be kind of the scorer on this team. And yet he will have to recognize for the Jazz to be as efficient as can be offensively that he can't take the shots that he does. I mean, I quite frankly thought in the last three games of the Houston series and actually game two as well, he forced the issue offensively. And even given that there were two to three guys, you know, helping on him, and even given that his teammates weren't making open shots and he felt he had to save the day, he was negative in the way he approached it. And you know, again, you and I both know Donovan well. This is the guy who that want to be the hero comes from the best possible place. But I think in order for him to, for the maximum team success, he will have to realize that he has to pass the ball and be more of a facilitator than he has been in the past. And so whether or not he can do that, I think is a question that, yeah, I don't know that any statistical system can predict, you know, and I want to be optimistic based on what I know about Donovan and what he says and what he does. And yet I think there is some level of you believe it when you see it, right?
He brings up maybe the most interesting point he's made all of our 2 days together, and it will lead into our day three with Andy Larson. He's Andy Larson, Salt Lake Tribune. Follow him on Twitter. Read his great stuff. Pay for the Salt Lake Tribune because journalism matters, if you haven't noticed. Check it all out with Andy Larson. Coming back with a regular first segment, and then Andy Larson parts 5 and 6 coming your direction, or part 3 coming your direction on the next edition of Locked On Jazz, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Thursday, I'll take any of your questions you might want to throw me on Twitter, and then give you parts 5 and 6 with Andy Larson coming your direction on Locked On Jazz. Locked On NBA is still clicking around. The new Locked On NFL is there for you, and we are continuing to grow our college lineups as well. If you make sure you get Jake Hatch with Locked On BYU as the football season gets close. This is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.